the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, welcome to Pat Trek. This is the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winogur, to Star Trek The Next Generation, a show that I've never seen.
And I have seen a ton of times. And Patrick, this episode is awesome!
Yeah, it was all right.
Did you like it?
No, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's very good. If you said that you didn't like this episode, I would be shocked.
I was thinking about messing with you for a little bit, but man, it was good. Measure of a Man is what we're talking about.
Thank you for getting the title out there.
Yeah, and Brian Sebi is with us because he called Measure of a Man on like the second episode of Pat Trek. He was like, I want to be the guest on this show.
You made me sit through Code of Honor. I figured you owed me.
you earned it, man. You earned it,
Brian. And we stuck to our word. We kept saying, like, when this episode comes out, Brian's in that chair.
And I am glad to be back here in this chair.
It's the exact same chair, isn't it?
It is the same chair.
Yeah. We always sit in the same spots.
We do.
Yeah.
Creatures of habit here. But it's a good episode.
It's very good.
I remember I was giving you a lot of grief early season two. Mm-hmm. Pat, when is this show going to get good?
Yeah, because I kind of promised you season two has some bright spots.
It got good, man. This is a good episode.
And last week, not to make you worry about grade inflation, but last week you gave a set to kill.
I know. That was a good episode, too.
This week we had a really good episode.
This one was even better.
I think we're on a little hot streak.
Yeah, seems like it.
Yeah, I hope it maintains. It has a couple bumps in the road, but...
Okay.
Let's not get too deep into that. Hey, I got a fun fact.
Okay, let's hear it.
The Measure of a Man was writer Melinda Snodgrass's first television credit.
Oh, so this is like the first Star Trek show that he wrote.
That she wrote.
She wrote, sorry.
Yes. This is the very first episode that she wrote and that she got a writing credit for. She drew from her own experience as an attorney in the writing of this episode.
Had she been on the... So she had been writing for the show but didn't get the chief writing credit.
I imagine.
I was looking this up too. It's one of these things that actually it came in her favor because of the writer's strike, where because of the writer's strike in 88 and 89 there... They didn't have a lot of scripts ready to go, so they were taking spec scripts from people who did not write for them. And then after this, she did end up writing for them for a year or two.
Yeah.
And she's done a bunch of work in TV since.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I'm conflicted about this because on the one hand, man, she knocked it out of the park. On the other hand, kind of sounds like she's a scab. I hate scabs, but well, this show was good.
I'm pretty sure at the time she was not actually a member of the
Guild. Right, she wasn't a member.
Because
she wasn't a TV
writer.
Yeah. But she just took a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. She took lemons and made lemonade.
But this show is good. Well, I got a couple interesting things from this week for Patrick's log.
Let's do it.
This came out February 13th, 1989. So I found a very 80s headline. Another side to Devo frontman is on view. It's been a long time since Devo had its platinum heyday with such early 80s hits as Whip It and Girl You Want. But you won't find co-founder and frontman Mark Mothersbaugh fretting about it. So this is just basically about Devo being on sabbatical and Mark Mothersbaugh going on this like avant-garde solo thing. And he went on to write music for TV. He did like the theme song for Rugrats and stuff like that.
Did he really?
Yep. A lot of cartoons.
I did not.
Mark Mothersbaugh was like, he did the score for them.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, at that point in time, I would have only known him because of Weird Al Yankovic.
Yep. Yeah. I think Mark Mothersbaugh said about that particular show, Dare to Be Stupid, is like, I wish we wrote that song. That was actually a really good, like, Devo song.
Patrick, I'm going to say, if that's your Patrick's log, slow news week.
I know. This was a pretty slow news week. Another interesting, there's like a bunch of stuff about Afghanistan. I was like, I've mentioned this every week. Just because... Yeah, Afghanistan is like constantly getting invaded.
That's okay. So we've got our buddies, the Mujahideen there.
Oh, right. No, this literally some of the same names. Or they're just like, oh, this Bin Laden guy seems pretty good.
Hey, he's against the Soviets. What could he do wrong?
Right, yeah. This seems like this will work out just fine. But no, this other thing, so keep in mind the Soviet Union is kind of falling apart. Soviet Army's new chief of staff spurns calls to end conscription. Colonel General Mikhail Moiseev said in an interview with Soviet television that students will no longer have to interrupt their studies to carry out military service. So at this point, everyone in the Soviet Union had to enlist for either 2 years in the Navy or 2 years in the Army. Russia still has conscription, but I think it's like for 6 months. I could be wrong about that. Yeah, but everyone, every male has to conscript still.
Yeah, that's historically pretty common,
it
isn't
is. It? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just like that has kind of never ended in Russia.
Interesting. 6 months. Can't get much done in 6 months.
Yeah, I think it's 6 months. I could be wrong. I know at that time in the Soviet Union, it was 2 years. Mm. And it was like mandatory service. Everybody.
Well, should we get into the episode?
Yeah. All right, so we're talking Measure of a Man, critically acclaimed Star Trek episode from season two. Starts off kind of normal. Like, they're just going to some starbase to switch out the crew. That's pretty much it.
Let me ask you this, Brian, because I've watched too much Star Trek to remember. This is the first time we've really seen him play poker, isn't it?
Yeah, it's...
I don't remember them doing this.
I think this might... Because it becomes a recurring thing that they do with the rest of the series.
Okay, poker's I did not know that.
Yeah, because it's, as I point out, it's a pretty good metaphor for, like, you know, just, you know, separating the human from just the rote, you know, memorizing what the rules of the game are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful scene. And Riker gets to be as Riker as he can possibly be.
Oh, no, it's great. Because, like, it starts out, Miles O'Brien is in there, and he's with Pulaski, Data, Geordi, and Riker, and they're all playing poker. And Miles is like, oh, no, this is my lucky seat. And Data's like, oh, I don't understand superstition. And they're, you know, they're setting up the rules. And Data's talking about, it's like, well, this seems like a pretty easy game. I mean, I memorized all of the probability. And Geordi's like, Data, there's more to it than that. And it gets to, like, this buildup where he is going head-to-head with Riker, and Riker's got a straight poker face.
Yeah, it's awesome. Riker is really good at poker.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You get out of this scene, and you learn throughout the whole series.
And he bluffs him. Yeah, he bluffs him.
Oh, he bluffs the hell out of him.
Yeah, Data has a fantastic hand.
Yeah, and he loses because Riker just bluffs him, and he learns what a bluff is. And he's like, I don't understand why you would bet when... you were going to lose. It wasn't probable that you're going to win. He says, yeah, but I knew that you would fold.
Yeah, I was betting that you would fold versus that my hand would win.
Yeah.
Which is great as we think through this whole episode. Also, I want to throw this out there. Geordi LaForge, terrible at poker.
Oh, I don't
really know. The whole season, watch. Every time they play poker, not very good. I would not take my poker advice from Geordi LaForge.
I don't really know how to play poker.
So, oh, really?
No, euchre.
Hey, I got a game starting next week.
I just decided
that we're going to... And $10 buy-in.
I'm going to lose so much money.
$10.
Oh, okay, I will lose at least $10.
We're high stakes here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're going to, as I said, switch out the crew in the Starbase. And we see, like... this isn't the first time we saw a Starbase.
Yeah, so that's actually, if you look at the Starbase, and if you're a fan of Star Trek II, it's actually the regular station from Star Trek II.
Oh, no way!
Upside down.
Of course it is. So they just flipped the composite?
Yeah, well, they're still using models back then.
Right.
So it's just the model they had in their archives.
That's awesome.
I was going to say it looked kind of familiar. Like, I think this is also from the first season, with the Binars.
Yeah, that's true.
But it looked a little different. So yeah, there's a really, you know, pretty good for the 80s. Neat little exterior shot of the Enterprise outside of it. We get to inside, there's like this little bar or something in the Starbase. Picard sees someone that he apparently knows, and he says, oh, it's Captain Philippa Louvois. And it is obvious that they have had some kind of relationship.
Yeah, this is how you do... like setting up a character who's never been there before. Just they had this little flirty interaction back and forth, and you learn so much in just a few lines. And
yeah, it's really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also a little tense. It's like well-performed.
They don't like each other, kind of, but they had a relationship. They do. It's just, it's tense because you remember the Stargazer affair from the battle.
Mm. Hate that episode.
You hated that
Love
episode.
Love this reference, though.
But Picard got court-martialed, and it was by her, because she was just doing her job, and I missed some of this because I apologize. I was laughing because she said, I've been the head of the 24th Sector JAG officers, and it sounded like she said JAG-offs.
She hit JAG really hard.
Yeah, and I was just like,
For the rest of the episode, I couldn't stop thinking about JAG officers.
I made every time she said JAG officer, and I just couldn't stop myself from laughing, so I apologize. I'm going to try not to think about that.
Well, it's got nothing to do with the quality of this episode.
I know it doesn't. It's just I'm an idiot, and it sounded funny to me. But no.
When they said I was laughing too.
I know. It's a funny series of words. So she's the head of the JAG officers, and
she has... Now I can't unhear it.
I know. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance.
Sorry to all of our listeners as well. All now, whenever you watch this excellent episode.
It's a great episode.
And apologies to any listeners who might actually be JAG officers.
I know. If you are, please don't court-martial us. Well, we're not in the Navy, so we should be fine.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you for your service. So, yeah, she had to do her job, which was prosecute him.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take, like, he didn't get prosecuted, but he seems a little upset about it.
She even says, you want to hit me with a chair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seems really upset about it.
Well, because he goes, this is like a really weird line for Picard, I think.
Oh, my God, yes.
He's like, if we weren't here with a bunch of other people, you know what I would do? And then she goes, what, hit me in the face with a chair? And he goes, well, after that. And he's being kind of like smooth.
It seems out of character for him, to be honest. This is the only part of the episode is like, that doesn't seem like the character.
And he means like kiss her or something, right?
Yeah, I think it's just like that sort of 90s, well, 80s in this case, like antagonistic, like will they, won't they sort of thing. Because. Mm-hmm. You know, they seem like they had that same sort of relationship in like Cheers and some of the other shows that same sort of era.
Yeah,
that's true. Sort of this level of violence to their romanticism,
and also by the 24th century AD, all sexual pathology has been bred out of humankind. So like any kind of weirdness going on there, he definitely didn't mean. He's like, I'm just gonna hold hands with you.
Yeah, exactly.
All these people weren't around.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, they're having this back and forth about that.
Oh, she also asked him to buy... The only way they'll go out is if you buy me dinner.
Right.
And Patrick, you astutely pointed out, why would he buy dinner?
They don't got money. They haven't had money for like two centuries. But I think, Brian, you were saying that this is just an idiom.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I imagine there's things that we say that don't make any sense in modern day.
You're like, bless you when you
sneeze. I'm gonna hang up the phone.
Right, yeah.
I haven't hung up a phone in years.
Yeah. And I may say bless you after you sneeze, but I don't believe that like you've been cursed by the devil. It's just allergies.
Stitch in time saves nine. I mean, I've never been sewing before.
Right. So
that's the phrase, right?
I think
that's one.
Yeah, but she says like only if you buy me dinner. And what they're interrupted by is this guy Admiral Nakamura, and he has this guy Bruce Maddox with him, who is a cyberneticist. So he's like an expert in robots, and he's like.
Ugh.
Yeah, this guy sucks. Ugh. You can already tell, like, this sleazy guy.
Oh, he's one of those guys. You know him right away.
Well, he's just got a smirk, you know?
Yeah.
He just doesn't... Ugh. Ugh. So...
We can just keep making gross noises.
The Admiral's going to take Maddox up on the Enterprise. He really wants to tour the Enterprise.
Now, do you know who the actor of the Admiral was, Brian?
I looked up. It was Clyde something.
Have we seen him before?
He looks super familiar. He was in Harold and Kumar...
Non-Star Trek stuff.
No, he was in Star Trek stuff,
yeah, I
too.
Think he's been in... He was one of the recurring, guest admirals.
Clyde Kusatsu.
Oh,
Kusatsu.
Yeah, great, great admiral. And we've seen him around a few times.
He was in Wrath of Khan, I think, as Admiral Nakamura.
He would have been too old by now.
No, he was in Star Trek V, I think. He was in one of the movies.
Oh, interesting. Hmm. Wow. Anyway,
I know he's also, I think, been on TNG a few times as that same Admiral character.
Very likable guy. Mm-hmm. Just brought a sleazeball along with him.
Yeah. It's not his fault.
Well,
so,
you know.
They're, going around, and he's like, what I really want to see is the bridge. And they go to the bridge, and then finally they get to Data. So,
turns out... Data just feels the eyeballs of this guy.
Oh, yeah. This Maddox guy is like... Finally, he just says, like, yeah, I'm here to work on your android.
Which, he even says, I'm here to disassemble your
dismantle,
android.
Yeah.
Yeah, right away. Yeah. Just leads with that.
And he, throughout the episode, he refers to Data as it.
Yeah, and it turns out Maddox knows Data because they were both in the academy together. And it became it came up to a vote or something?
Well, no, he was on the committee when Data applied for Starfleet.
Oh, okay.
Who was the only vote against Data joining
Starfleet.
Because
he didn't think Data was a person.
Sentient.
Sentient.
Sentient. Yeah, well, he doesn't think he has, like, personhood, basically.
Right, exactly.
He thinks he's, like, a
machine.
A machine, which
they
he is.
They keep equating him to a toaster in this episode, which I think is an interesting thing to compare Data to, of all objects, a toaster.
They don't have toasters anymore. They got replicators.
Yeah,
no one's buying each other dinner. No one is toasting bread with these things. They just push a button and all this stuff happens.
This is very pedantic, Patrick.
Why did toasters
you know
stick
there's,
around?
There's some, like, 24th century hipster who has, like, an antique toaster that he sits there and, like, to make his you know... Like, historically accurate bread.
Right, yeah. There's some, like...
It's probably better from a toaster. Just like vinyl's better than CDs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if y'all read, but there's, like, Vox had something where it's, like, this couple that they live in Victorian times, and they're just, like...
No way.
Yeah, and the guy, like, rides one of those bicycles with a big-ass wheel.
The penny farthing?
Yeah. It's like, you know that there are people... They're like, we're buying each other dinner. We're still using money. It's just realer that way.
And he'd probably refer to it as a velocipede.
Right,
which
yeah.
is honestly, I think, a better word than bicycle that we've lost. But
yeah, that's an awesome word because it sounds like Velociraptor. Much like Jag Officer sounds like Jagoffs. Anyway, so Maddox is like, I'm going to disassemble.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for your service. But, Maddox wants to disassemble Data. They take this to the conference room and, you know... Data's there, Maddox is there, and Picard is there, and they're trying to sort out, all right, what do you want to do? So Maddox is trying to build what he calls a positronic brain, which I don't really know what that is.
That's Data's brain.
That's Data's brain.
Yes.
He wants to build more Data.
Yeah. He wants to basically build an army of Datas.
Okay.
Yeah, because the whole thing with Data is that his brain, Dr. Noonien Soong, when he created it, it was sort of this, like, he had solved some problem that Data asked him if he had figured out, like, how this electron filament.
Okay.
And Soong solved it, but no one knows how he did it.
Oh. So he's trying to take his brain apart to figure out how that happened.
Because that's why Data's unique, is that this was something that they didn't think you could do, and suddenly here's this android who can.
And what he would do would dump Data's memories into this positronic brain that he has while he's doing it, disassemble them, put them back together. He's like, look, the risk is minimal, but there is risk. So
I also want to do a quick callback to the schizoid man right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's very interesting to me that they dropped that scientist's mind into the computer.
Yes.
And Data became Data again. But now Data is fearful of dumping his mind into the computer because he's afraid of losing it.
Well, it kind of seems like it's the difference between deleting programs in your hard drive and taking your computer apart and putting it back together again.
Well, I mean, the sort of thing, though, Data admits, like, oh, yeah, you can get all of, like, my knowledge and the information, but you're not preserving the substance of it or the context of that information. So, you know, you might have, like, the report of, like, their mission to some planet, but not the fact that, you know, and he was worried that they might have, you know...
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and I think that helps reiterate my point from the schizoid man that was not actually the scientist in his brain. It was a computer program that acted like the scientist.
Oh, that's what I thought he did. I thought he made a computer program that would
act that's what
like
I'm saying, that. But we kept talking about personhood in that episode, and that's the only reason I'm bringing it back up. And it's like, did he become this new personality,
or did he just have like a computer virus in his
head? He had a computer virus, and Data's fear of transferring his own mind into the computer and back to me says yes, he most definitely did.
That's a good point. I haven't thought about that.
A boom. See, so, Patrick, I can see into the future.
Yeah.
That's why I argue some of the points I argue
right
on the show.
I didn't think about this because I didn't know that this episode was coming up because I made a point not to look up anything about Measure of Man. But what happened was that Maddox is, like, laying out all, you know, this proposal. No one wants anything to do with it. Data's like, well, you haven't tested this before. No.
Well, he doesn't know about the filament.
Right.
At
he's
all.
Like, I don't understand why you're doing this experiment. No. And Bunny says, well, I've got this order from Starfleet Command, and it separates you from your service on the Enterprise, transfers you to me. So he can do whatever he wants.
Which I love this about this scene is we have already established in Star Trek, you can refuse orders like that.
Well, yeah, especially refuse orders to, you know, experiment on you medically. Yes.
But even Picard, remember, he was asked to be admiral back at the academy.
Right.
And he said, no, I want to stay a captain. And they let him stay a captain when he refused it. So there's a precedent set already that a officer can maintain their current position and not change.
Oh, okay. So if he was seen as a human, then this would not have
well, yeah,
ever
exactly.
been an issue.
So it helps with the strength of this episode is we know we've already seen
in action.
We know
if he is seen as a human being, then, or
that
as,
wouldn't even have happened
as
at all.
A sentient being, then that this never would have happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, whereas Maddox just sees him as property of Starfleet and yeah. just like, oh, I'm transferring this computer from this starship to another one.
He's like filling out an invoice to like, you know, move a piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's like, I need the ice machine.
They keep equating him to the computer on board the ship.
Okay. All right. So that's where we're at. Yes. Maddox is like, I got the orders to transfer, and I'm going to experiment on them. And there's nothing you can do about that. So in private, Picard is saying, well, you know, I recognize that Starfleet has some interest in making more of these things. Because the idea is that they're going to make more of Data, or Data-like creatures, and use them as cannon fodder, basically, is what it sounds like.
Ugh.
Yeah, it sounds, it feels like kind of like Picard hadn't thought this whole thing through yet, where it's like, you know, Data, help this guy.
Yeah.
And then Data has the really great retort of, well, you know, Geordi's visor is better than human eyes.
Yes.
Why don't they require Starfleet officers to have their eyes removed and get these things implanted?
So, yeah, Picard tries to, in private, tell Data all this stuff, and that is a really good line. You know, Data
yeah,
just
beautiful.
Says, oh, so I guess you don't have an answer for that. Is that because you're human and I'm not? And you don't see me as human.
And that was one of the places where it shows how great of an actor Patrick Stewart is, because he didn't actually respond to it.
Nope.
But the expression on his face was just like,
well, you got me there.
Yeah, oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. How awesome is the acting in this episode?
It's
Can
good,
we just
man.
Pause for a moment?
Dude, Brent Spiner,
Patrick Stewart. Between the two of them, and it's heavy on both of them. Wow. It's amazing. And they have a lot of interaction with one another. I love how much Picard defends Data.
Yeah.
Yeah, the biggest fear I had going into this was I hadn't watched in a few years. I'm like, oh, I hope it lives up to my memory of it. And it totally, like the acting in that is still just gives me shivers.
But this is like a turning point for Picard, because he realizes like, wow, shit, he's right. I'm going to look up all of the laws about this. He is going whole hog on defending Data and making sure he stays on the Enterprise. He's going to do whatever it takes. So he's totally swayed by this. He looks over the regulations, and he goes back to the starbase, but he's got to talk to Captain Lavoie. You know, old flame slash old enemy, I'm not really sure, I guess kind of both.
Thin line between love and hate.
Yeah. Lavoie is like, well, you know, he could refuse to participate in the experiment, but he can't refuse a transfer, which I'm not sure if this has to do with his humanity or if this has to do with the Starfleet thing? Like, could Picard refuse the Admiral thing because he was captain? Or...
Yeah, see, I think maybe you can refuse a promotion, but I'm pretty sure, like, if you're
transferred,
you really can't.
Didn't it happen with Riker already as well?
Well, I think they were trying to promote him as well.
They tried to give him his own ship, and he turned it down. I don't think you would be able to, like, you need to be on this other ship. I don't think you'd be able to turn that down.
All right, fair.
So this is where the dispute is, well...
But in the real military, you can't refuse any of that.
Yeah,
kind of stuff,
no,
right?
You can't, no. So that's the issue, is that he can't refuse a transfer, but he can refuse the experiment if he's not seen as Starfleet property.
But Picard knows that the transfer goes through, Maddox will find some way to do it.
He's going to find some way to do it, yeah. So the only option for Data to get out of any of this for sure is to resign. So that's what he does. He doesn't want to do it. This is his whole life. You know, he's gone through the academy. He's put up so much of... I don't know how old chronologically he's supposed to be, or like...
He's only a little bit older than Wesley Crusher. That was established a few episodes ago.
That's still like, he has sentience and adulthood as soon as he was built.
Right.
So
exactly.
This, like, he's put what, like 16 years of his life into this?
Yes. Or so.
Yeah.
Sure. Is that,
yeah,
give or take?
I mean, yeah. I don't know the exact how long he was when he was found, but it was not like, you know, 20, 30 years ago. It was more like, yeah, 10 to 15.
Yeah. Cause a few episodes ago, Data and Wesley Crusher had an exchange where Data's only a couple years older than Wesley Crusher.
Right, yeah. But he's put, like, he's put a good chunk of years.
Right.
And so he's got to pack up, and one of the things we see him packing up is the little hologram of Tasha Yar.
Isn't that awesome?
That was pretty cool.
Oh, see, we talked about this during season one.
It came back, yeah.
Yeah, how Tasha Yar makes a... It is a big deal as the show continues, mm-hmm. although the way they killed her was...
Terrible.
Stupid.
Yeah.
She matters so much because of how much she mattered to the crew.
So he's putting that away. He's got
specifically Data.
He's got like a book of Shakespeare and he's got some other stuff. Maddox just comes into his room and picks up his book and starts thumbing through it and like quoting Shakespeare at him like some nerd. And he's like, oh, do you understand that? And Data, you know, rightfully asks him, hey, aren't supposed to like knock and not go through people's shit? Well, like, that's doesn't. Not enough. He doesn't say that, but that's...
Yeah, you JAG officer.
Yeah, JAG officer. Yeah, you're not supposed to rifle through someone's things.
No.
And he it's says, well, it doesn't matter. He says, well, you know, it doesn't matter because I'm your officer now. No, you're not because I resigned. And Maddox insists that he doesn't have that right. You know, it's kind of this back and forth.
Yeah, this is where they really go into, like, the whole information versus substance.
Exactly. Thing. So, that conversation we had earlier about, like, what is he afraid of by transferring his thoughts? And Maddox is trying to convince him because he doesn't want to have this fight. And he uses, or Data uses, the example of poker earlier. He's like, I went through all of the probability and I should have won, but I didn't because I didn't understand the human element of it. I didn't understand that I could be bet against by people knowing what my actions are and stuff. So there's, it's not just, you're not just the sum of your memories. You're also, there's also, I think he says a flavor too.
Yes.
There's other things. It's an ineffable quality, as he says, that like, that's in addition to the thoughts. You're not just a collection of your memories and I don't want to lose anything. And Maddox is like, I'm not buying it. I'm still going to do it. I'm going to take you apart. I'm going to mess with your brain. Yeah, he calls him it this entire time.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Which I would think if he is met with this argument, I'd be like, oh, that's probably a sentient being. I'm not going to mess with that.
I know.
You
like,
know?
How many times do you have to talk to the man before you're like, oh, yeah, that's sentient.
Right. Or even if you don't think it is, like there's a good chance it probably is if it's talking to you and telling you, please don't kill me.
I know. Well, he brings up the computer at one point and says, if the computer were to say it wasn't ready for a refit, would you not refit it? And my argument is, no! As soon as it's aware enough to tell you, please don't change me.
I mean, I think
you gotta deal with what you've created.
Maybe Maddox is thinking, oh, you know, he's just programmed to say that. You know, this is like your computer, if someone like programmed your computer to say, like, don't kill me before you turn it off every time. It's like, well, my computer's just programmed to do that. But in this case, he's like, he's putting up a...
He made a
logical argument.
He didn't just start screaming, don't kill me.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't help, like, my computer keeps today asking me, like, hey, you should upload me or upgrade me to Sierra. Come on. You can do it.
Like, I don't think Cortana is real, you know. But Data, obviously, like, yeah.
Wait a minute. Is my Mac sentient?
I hope not.
I better never close it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is... It's there to set him up as the you know, the dichotomy between like the two sides.
Yeah, and they go back to Lavoie and she's like, well, technically he's property of Starfleet, like any computer would be. And he's no more legally able to refuse it than, you know, any computer would be able to refuse a refit, which seems insane to me. Like, she finds some law from the 21st century. It would be like us finding a law from before America existed. Of like, well, according to this thing in common law, you know, it says you actually can't divorce your husband ever. So,
there you go.
There you go. Guess that's settled. also, you got to do 4 days a week of labor for your liege lord, and got a toast, drink to the king, and...
That's right. That's what you got to do.
Right. So it's like, she's using this archaic law to say, like, well, technically, Starfleet property, you know? We got to... That's all we can do. Picard tries to challenge this, but the way that it works out, there's no crew on the starbase.
Well, there's no crew in the JAG office.
There's no JAG officers on the starbase.
Thank you for your service,
by the way, JAG offs. And they can't really staff a courtroom. So Louvois says, "Well, I have to use any officers at hand, which is you and First Officer Riker."
Poor Riker.
Riker is put in this terrible position. Picard is like, well, you know, you're defending Data. And Riker has to be on the prosecution. Riker says, I refuse. You know, there's an obvious conflict of interest here. And also he was like, I believe Data is a person. I've served with him. He's my friend. And she says, well, if you refuse, that means there is no challenge. There is no court case. And we just have to rely back on this legal precedent that we have, which is that he is a machine. He's a piece of property. So it's your choice. You can have this courtroom battle where you have to prosecute your friend and challenge his own humanity, and you have to do it convincingly, or we're just going to go on this archaic law that says, you know, he's a piece of metal.
Yeah, and she even, like, you know, points out, like, if I ever suspect that you're not fulfilling it to the best of your ability to prosecute this, it's done.
It's messed up.
Yeah, so it's...
Poor Riker.
He is in a terrible position. She even says, like, it's an unenviable position that you're in.
I feel so bad for the man.
Well, he's got to accept it. There's really nothing else he can do.
He's got no choice.
So
he could go to the sad desert and cry a bit.
Right, but what he does instead is he goes, like, he, like, looks through the computer, looks up all the stuff about Data.
Now let's talk about
this.
Okay, yeah. So he all he has to do is say his name, and you look up the schematics of Data, right?
Yep.
That's all I got to do. Data has secrets that he doesn't want people to know.
Like how to turn them off.
Like how to turn them off. We know that that's a thing that he doesn't want anybody to know.
Yep.
But all you got to do is look it up on the internet.
Basically, like, if you're a Starfleet officer, himself. You can look all this stuff up.
Well, again, I still think it's probably because in his capacity as prosecutor, he was maybe given special access for the information he would need for the court case.
Okay. I don't like that answer. I'm accepting it, but I don't like it, Brian.
Yeah.
I'm not against him, or not for it either.
I just don't think you should be able to just find his off switch if it's a secret.
I mean, apparently he did.
Also, who knows? Maybe there was some night where he and Picard were just up real late, and they're like watching movies, and like, dude, by the way, Data has an off switch.
No, that's not what happened. Okay. And I distinctly remember... Data telling Beverly Crusher where it was and saying, nobody else knows where this is. Please don't tell anybody. And then that whole thing has been thrown out the window. Everybody knows where this off switch is. You just reach behind his ear and flick.
No, he found it. He did a little Googling. I guess he found the Android section in Wikipedia or something.
It would be on 4chan.
This is another good acting example where, like, the expression on his face as he was kind of reading this thing at first, he's kind of like, oh, I'm excited I'm doing this, but then he kind of, like, gets this look on his face where he's like, oh, I can really do, like, I can really win this thing.
Yeah.
And he's realizing...
Great acting. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, back in the Starbase, Louvois starting the hearing. She's the judge, I guess, which I guess that isn't Judge Advocate General, right? For some reason, I thought JAG was like lawyer, you know, like in Few Good Men.
I don't really know.
Yeah, I think Judge Advocate, because there was that TV show JAG as well.
JAG, okay.
Which I don't know if that was before or after this episode aired.
Probably after, right?
A little after.
Yeah.
Was that based on this? Was
it's
that
all
that
based
was?
On
this.
Well, I think it's based on the
episode?
Actual, like,
yeah, I know.
That's a thing in the Navy.
So Louvois is...
Wait, there's JAGOFs in the Navy?
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Thank you for your service,
thank
by the way.
Thank you for your service.
So... Back in the Starbase, Louvois is beginning the hearing, and Riker is calling Data to the stand. Data's got to put his hand on this, like, it's not really a Bible, but it, like, reads out who he is and all this stuff, and they try to shut it off, but Picard's like, no, I want Maddox to hear all of, like, the awards that he's won.
Yeah.
And it reads, like, all of his, like, he's got Medal of Valor, you know, Cross of Gold, or some other stuff. And he's got a lot of medals.
Yeah.
is the point.
He's a great officer.
He's good at his job, and he wants everyone to know. He's an amazing
living creature of some kind.
So, he makes the entire courtroom hear this. And Riker runs Data through the ringer. Man, it is tough to watch.
Why did he have him bend the metal?
I think to prove that he's just a machine. He's technically perfect. You know, he can bend this piece of steel. He hasn't bent this piece of steel. It's like, what is your calculating power? And he does all this other stuff. And then...
which are kind of hilariously thinking about today's computers. Not that...
I didn't know. No, it's not that much.
It's... actually, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, it was like giga.
He had like number of bytes.
Something trillion. So it was like
60 trillion operations per second.
So
800 quadrillion bits.
Supercomputers today can do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang.
Are they sentient?
Yeah.
Oh.
Can they command a spaceship? I don't think so.
I don't know. We got like two supercomputer clusters in my building at work, and maybe I need to be more worried than
I am. Yeah, I know. You need to take them apart, see how they work, and then put them back together again.
I'm pretty sure that would get me way fired.
Yeah. Not from Starfleet, apparently. So Riker then removes Data's hand, and he apologizes to him as he's doing it. Shows is like, look, you can take this thing apart, and then he shuts him off. Without warning him, too. Like, that's kind of messed up. And he says, Pinocchio's strings have been cut.
Boom. Great line.
Mic drop.
Dang.
Well, clearly, he suddenly seems so mechanical. And we got to give it up to Brent Spiner right now. Holy cow, is that well acted.
Yeah.
And honestly, you got to give it up to Jonathan Frakes, too. Because, you know, he's not always, I think, like necessarily like a Shakespearean actor, but he did a really fantastic
job. And he's in a weird position because, like, Riker, the character, doesn't believe what he's saying. But he has to act it convincingly. Mm-hmm. So that he doesn't, you know, end up screwing over his friend. And as Picard mentioned earlier, I don't know if I said this, this has far-reaching effects. This establishes precedent for if there are any future Datas or creatures like Data.
Which is the goal. And we know that. The goal is to have a ton more Datas.
Which, in a way, kind of surprised me. It's never come up before when you think about how many androids showed up in the original series.
Mm-hmm.
But
I haven't seen it.
We'll forget about that.
So, yeah, but they're not quite as awesome.
That's true.
Yeah. And they're discussing this
problem.
They
don't know this filament stuff.
Yeah. Whatever the filament they keep talking about.
Yeah.
But back on the Enterprise and 10 forward, Picard is talking about this with Guinan. And this is a really
Whoopi.
Good scene. This is a good scene.
She's a great actress.
I have not seen enough of Whoopi Goldberg.
No.
She's really good in this part. So he's explaining his predicament. And Guinan is observing that... well, you know, if Maddox, let's say this Maddox guy wins. And let's say he builds a whole bunch more of Data. Data's really good at physical labor. It's hard to destroy him. He can breathe in space. Like, they're going to be sending all of these little Datas, who we believe are sentient beings, out to do the dirty work. This is not the first time this has happened in human history, she points out. And Picard's like, oh, you're talking about slavery.
Like, yeah, I mean, she even starts out saying, like, you know, the disposable people
who,
throughout history and that have done these things. And then Picard, I think she leads him to realize slavery.
It's like
she never actually says it herself.
Right,
but
Picard does.
But I guess we don't know this about her yet, but she lived through that era.
Oh, that's right. She's super old.
Yeah.
They hinted that earlier. Like, Wesley's like, is it true that you're 1,500 years old or something?
So she knows what humanity was like back in that time.
Yeah. So Picard is starting to realize, like, really just how far-reaching the effects of this ruling could be. This is like a Supreme Court case that he's got to
argue. Oh, yeah.
The precedent is huge. So back in the courtroom, Picard is starting his defense of Data, and he's dismissing all these arguments about Data being constructed. And he's like, look, I'm not denying that Data's a machine, but aren't we kind of machines? Like, we were created.
We were created by humans, a man and a woman.
Humans. Because that was Riker's whole argument, is that, like, you were created by a human. It's like, yeah, so were we.
Right.
Like, there are mechanical things that we can do.
And are we the property of our parents?
Right. And no one Are believes we? That. That's an insane thing to think.
Wait, what?
Unless you're like super Confucian or something, where like you are not allowed to give up your body. He's like, we have come to this conclusion that we are our own and we can choose our own destiny. And data can do this. So like just as weird, like little bits of DNA and stuff, data is these little, you know, bits of metal and neural networks.
He also wants the word sentient defined, which I thought was amazing.
Well, he asked them to define all these terms, and it turns out they don't really have definitions for them.
None of them do.
Before we get to that, though, like that was a point where he also brought out all the things that Data had kept with him to take.
Yeah,
this
way he
brought back like you know the medals. Like, why do you keep these? He's like, there's no logical reason to have these medals. He's like, yeah, but they remind me of those times.
Yeah, why would just something that's a machine, an only machine, decide to keep this book that I gave you? And he's like, well, because I like you, and you gave me that book.
Well, and then the medals, too. And then his response even is, does that make me vain, or is that vanity? Which is such a human quality
right.
as well.
Well, and then the ringer is when he brings out the holo picture, and it's Tasha Yar. And he's like,
you have no other pictures of your crewmates or friends. Why her? And Data doesn't want to tell him, but then he does. He's like, we were intimate. And the look on Lavoie's face is sort of like, what?
Dang. I thought that Riker was going to go over and high-five him at this point, but that did not. Just because that seems like a Riker thing to do.
Yeah, he should have.
But no, he maintained his professional situation here. And yeah, this pretty much crushes it at this point. It's hard to argue that he's not.
He loves her.
Yeah.
It's so clear that he loves her or at least has some sort of affinity for her still.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then he gets Maddox up on the thing and then Zui drops the sentience hammer.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, I jumped ahead a little. But yeah, he asks him to define it.
Yeah, Maddox. Well, he asks Maddox to.
Yeah.
When they call the robo-scientists up and like this is when, you know, this is Picard spiking the ball at this point.
Oh, yeah.
He is
Patrick Stewart being amazing.
Dude, he is chewing the scenery. It's pretty good.
Because he asked him to define it. He said it comes down to like intelligence, self-awareness, and consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And
makes him define all of those.
Right. You know, and he pretty quickly is like, you admit Data's intelligent. That's not even a question.
Yep.
And you can tell Data is self-aware.
Yeah, he doesn't want you to do this thing to him.
Right.
And, you know, consciousness, and he goes in this whole thing about how like we know that he's conscious. Like, I think we pretty much established all of this. Maybe there's some question because he's a machine. Okay, so what does that mean if you rule that he's property? You can't have that on your conscience. And it works. Because Picard is saying that, look, there's going to be more and more of Data built, no matter what. Whether or not this decision goes one way or the other, we're going to build more of them, but this decision will affect their lives, and we believe that they do have lives. And it works.
Yeah, this is honestly just one of these scenes where if you had never seen it, look on Netflix or YouTube or something, because it's
we
Patrick
can't do
Stewart
it justice. Yeah.
At his finest.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful television. I love, too, how the judge, what was her name again? Sorry.
Lavoie.
Instantly comes to a decision.
Oh yeah, well she's
saying
she
doesn't even need to leave the room.
Well, she doesn't
and
even
take a
know.
Recess.
Yeah, she doesn't even know if he's alive, like a sentient or not. But she's saying that's not up for me to decide. But the damage that I would do, if it is up in the air, is it's unmeasurable, and it would last throughout the centuries. So I'm gonna err on the side of caution here and say, nope, he's a sentient being.
He is free to choose to learn that for himself.
Yeah. So Data goes up to Maddox and formally refuses the proceed. Like immediately, he's like, no, I'm going to turn down that transfer. Thanks. See you later. But this is really nice of him. And he didn't need to do this. Data says, but as I am a sentient being, I'm still around. And I think your work is really intriguing. Maybe work on it a little bit so I can figure out what the hell you're doing. And come back to me.
Yeah, I'll still be here.
I'll still be here.
Because I'll outlive you by hundreds of years.
Yeah, and he'll be on the Enterprise, I think is what he was saying. Yes. He doesn't want to leave the ship. So Data leaves, and Lavoie is talking to Maddox. And Maddox refers to Data as he. He stops saying it.
Boom. Convinced.
And Lavoie mentions that. And Lavoie was just calling Data it just a second ago. She's like, hey, have you noticed we stopped calling him it and started calling him he, like, right now? And I think Maddox is starting to come around.
It actually does come back up later in the series, too.
Really? Maddox does?
Maddox never comes back, but there's an episode where it's basically Data recounting to Maddox of the activities of his day. Huh. It's actually called Data's Day. So it's a good episode, great season episode, 5.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, so it's they keep in contact.
So this comes back. That's interesting. So after they win the court case, Riker's like, he's not in the sad desert, but he's like leaning up against the wall in the conference room and like looking out at the stars, you know, brooding like you do. And Data
like,
comes.
Like he does.
Yeah, like he does. Data comes in. He's like, hey, man, we're having a party because we won that case. And Riker's like, I don't really feel comfortable about that because I had to argue against you. But, you know, Data rightfully points out, yeah, you had to do that, though. And because you did, we were able to win. Otherwise, I'd be taken apart right now. Which convinces him, like, all right, you got a point there.
You're a wise man.
Yeah, and it kind of cements their friendship right there. Mm-hmm. You know, because had he not agreed to do that, Data would, we don't really know what would have happened. It's not really important what would happen to Data. It's what would happen to every other being like Data that they make in the future.
Yeah.
And I think the gravity of the situation has finally hit them that, like, what they accomplished was a big deal.
Yeah, totally.
And they go off, you know, to the celebration. That's
the
it.
That's the end of the episode.
Yeah. Oh, wait. And there is one part I almost forgot. When Picard is leaving the starbase.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where he says to Lavoie, he's just like, dinner. And then she asks him, are you buying? And he's like, yeah. They don't have money. Why did this conversation, like, why did that happen that
because
way?
It's cute.
I guess.
It's, yeah, it's charming.
I like the relationship. It was,
yeah.
It is great. And it's also, like, reaffirms Picard's character that, you know, he falls in love. He just always puts his career in front of everything else. Mm. And that's just established once again right here in a really real way.
Yeah.
Like, it never feels cheap or kind of like too blatant, you know? Anyway, Brian.
Yes.
This is the part of Patrek where we like to rate the episode. If we thought it was amazing, a great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, we set to kill. If it was okay, if it comes up in the queue, give it a watch. We set to stun, and if it's boring, skip at all costs. We leave it in the holster. So, Brian, tell us, what did you think?
Well, I don't think this is a surprise at all that this is, of course, a set to kill. This is the first great episode of Star Trek, and I know you said there's no degrees of set to kill or set to stun, but this is set to kill blowing up Remick's head set to kill.
Whoa, dang. That is a brutal set to kill.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, I'm not going to tell you what I think yet, Patrick.
I'm going to have to go set the stun on this one.
What?
Are you serious?
No, I'm just messing with you. Set to kill. Set to kill, baby. Yeah, this is just like unloading a clip into someone set to kill. I don't think they have clips on phasers. I don't know how phasers work. It's never really been explained to me, but it was good. For all the reasons that we just described, like this... You know, they had a deep philosophical issue that was explained in a succinct, easy-to-digest way and made me feel things about the characters involved.
Yeah.
It was well done.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say about it. It was good. Watch it.
You know how we know that this is a really strong episode? There's no B-plot, and Patrick said nothing about it.
I know.
He didn't even notice.
I didn't even realize that.
That
until
there's
he just
no
said that.
B-plot because the A-plot... The only plot is that freaking good. Of course this is a set to kill episode. It's amazing.
It's great.
Yeah, this is Star Trek at its best. We're going to have a lot more episodes like this that really make you feel something, really make you think, and really push the boundaries of what the world in this time is. I love it. Like we're getting to the point where it's like, yeah, there's so much backstory to pull from. There's so much to think about. I love it. Set to kill for sure. We're just all in agreement on this,
yeah,
one, right?
No.
Right now,
and we're not going to argue about this.
No.
It was just a good ass episode.
Sometimes we argue for a bit. There's no reason to. Nope. It's so good. But Brian told me that I've made a couple of mistakes, so I think I guess now's a good time to bring those up when explaining this world to you.
Uh-oh.
Well,
not major things. It's more like I thought, well, I could email you about it, or I could come on your podcast.
No, it's
tell
perfect.
You
no, it's much better this
yeah,
way.
Keep us honest. Keep me honest.
One thing is you mentioned that the Klingons being in the Federation, and they are not in the Federation. They are allies of the Federation.
No, I said that. Okay. I said there's a treaty between them.
I think
them.
I said that they were in the Federation. Yes. And you said, no, there's just a tenuous alliance.
Right.
Yes.
The other thing I was going to mention, like you had talked a couple episodes ago about the whole Pulaski versus Data thing and like why she was so mean to him.
Yes.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, I think their entire point of that was trying to replicate the whole McCoy and Spock antagonism.
Oh.
Where McCoy was always like, oh, you green-blooded Vulcan.
Doesn't Bones also not like to go on transporters?
Yes. He's,
and Pulaski doesn't
either. Pretty much, it's all of his things, but at least... They don't have the chemistry that DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy have with each other. That whole relationship only works because you know that at the core of it, those two are like
actually
some of
like
the best
other.
Friends in like the universe.
That's not evident.
This is just like, well, that worked there. Let's try this same plot
right.
The same
without
character.
Establishing any of the history whatsoever.
And Data's just the Spock standing because he's the alien or he's the different one.
Interesting.
The only other thing I was going to mention was you had mentioned this airing on CBS. And the thing was, TNG was actually in syndication.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, it was actually the first big primetime syndicated show, and that actually led to a bunch of these shows being in syndication. So here's the thing. I was going to... Because Star
it's
Trek the original...
owned by Paramount, though,
it was
right?
owned by Paramount.
Yeah,
and
I knew that.
This is where it got weird.
I thought it initially aired on CBS, though, right?
No. Well, it may have in some markets where if CBS was doing the syndication
but
it
could have been on, like, ABC or NBC elsewhere.
Right. So, but here's where it gets complicated, because I started looking into this thinking, like, oh, yeah, CBS is just the network. No. It gets weird because for... Even back in the 60s, CBS, the media conglomerate, which owned Paramount or was partnering with them for doing it back in the 60s when it aired on NBC, and even in like the 80s and that, CBS was still like a corporate parent, but then Viacom bought them out as like their subset. But then there were two Viacoms. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I have read 3 or 4 Wikipedia articles. I still do not understand
how it works.
The CBS media conglomerate.
So that means that. So did Next Generation air on other network?
Yeah.
So it wasn't just on CBS.
Right. Because I think like in Chicago, I think it aired maybe on, was it WGN or was that DS9?
Maybe UPN?
UPN?
No, probably,
UPN was later.
Probably
later.
WGN at that point.
Because the weird
I don't
thing
know.
Was.
It's super confusing.
I grew up downstate, so we got it on the station out of Bloomington, and. When it was supposed to air on WGN, we actually got a different show because only one show, like TV station in each market can have that show.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it was
so
the
it was
first
on a
prime
bunch
time.
Of different networks.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that led to like a bunch of sci-fi series, especially in like the 90s being
like Farscape and stuff, right?
Yeah. Right, and Babylon 5.
Yeah, which those were all on the same station.
I think Sequest maybe.
I think. Yeah.
And maybe like WYZZ in Bloomington for me was they were the Star Trek and sci-fi network, but
they were
a Fox affiliate.
Yeah,
wow, so, I did not know this.
So yeah,
so that's my bad. I guess I assumed because of Paramount, because Paramount
Paramount had a deal with CBS, and I think they still do.
Yeah, yes. I think Paramount still kind of was like the production studio, but CBS is sort of like I said, there's a couple different CBSs.
Right,
there's the network, and then there's like
there's
this
the
giant media
the holding
thing.
Company, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
Huh.
So,
all right.
Fun with corporate
synergy,
I guess.
All right. Anything else?
That was pretty much it.
All right. Well, cool. Guess what? We got a new iTunes review, and I made the promise.
We did do this.
That I would read any new iTunes review on the episode. So I'm reading it right now. And it is from, oh boy, it's already a struggle. Lagitsu? Lagitsu.
That sounds right.
Lagitsu?
Sure.
Lagitsu. Well, thank you for the review. It's 5 stars, and it's titled, Don't Leave This One in the Holster. This is a great podcast where Patrick introduces his friend, Patrick, to Star Trek The Next Generation. Now, Patrick has never seen any Star Trek, and Patrick has seen TNG a ton of times. So we get a nice conversation between them, and sometimes guests. Like you, Brian.
Yay.
That wasn't written there. I just added that. As they go episode by episode through TNG. I am not a huge TNG fan, but the Pats make for an entertaining show anyway. It's not all goofs. You also learn something most episodes. Pat provides us with some production facts, while Pat gives us Patrick's log, a look into headlines from the week the episode originally aired. They also take some time to discuss various parts of the Trek universe, like the Prime Directive. Anyway, I've learned a lot from the show and laughed a whole lot more. Give it a shot. Thank you so much for that review.
Thank you. Yeah. I like the reference to our rating system of the title.
Yes.
And I like that they pointed out both of our names are Patrick. So I'm going to give that review 5 stars.
We should do that. We should review
review your reviews after you after you leave them.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for leaving it. And please, leave us more reviews because there are a lot of Star Trek podcasts
Tons
out there.
Of them.
And the more reviews you get, the higher you show up in the search.
And one thing that I will say, I don't want to, you know, toot our own horn a little bit, but this is probably a good podcast for people that are not super into Star Trek because I don't know anything about it. And so if you know everything about it already, we may not give you any new information.
Oh, I definitely don't.
But
as the person who knows
Star Trek,
if Brian
Sebi
had
a podcast, he would be an expert.
Yes.
This is just kind of a good one if you just like kind of hearing about it or are interested in getting into it.
Yeah.
So recommend this to any of your friends that are in that boat.
Right. Who need like a starter trek.
Yeah. A starter trek for Star Trek.
Yes.
I've even been enjoying it because I love TNG, but I really haven't watched it regularly for over a decade.
Oh, there's a lot of people like that too.
So it's been a really good refresher. I'm like, oh, I remember that episode. Or in the case of like Code of Honor, I had no memory of it. And I kind of wish
I blocked it out.
Hadn't. But
I don't blame you. So yeah, tell your friends, rate us on iTunes because it does help us increase in the rankings.
Yeah.
And the more and more people that we get listening to the show, the better.
Yeah, and I've got to tell you, a lot of people have started listening recently.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened. Whoever recommended us to their friends, you're awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Y'all keep doing that.
Yeah, do more of that. I'd appreciate it. But the other day, I was like looking at the numbers, and I was like, Patrick, who did you talk to?
No one, man. I don't have any friends. I'm 30 and married, and I go directly home after work if I don't come here. So
I'm 31 and married, so I have even less friends.
But, so thank you all of you for listening and leaving reviews and stuff. We'd really appreciate it.
We do.
Brian, did you have anything you wanted to plug?
If you happen to be out in the western suburbs, our Unwritten Works of William Shakespeare show at Westside Improv in downtown Wheaton is now a recurring house team there, so we'll be playing every couple of weeks.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's a pretty well-rated show from a really, like, it's a good theater, everything I've heard about it.
Yeah, it's a great place. I love playing out there. And it's actually close to where I live, so that's even better.
Yeah.
And I know Facebook is for news, but you can find me there as just Brian Sebi. And if you happen to be a senior-level Linux DevOps engineer looking for a job in the Southwest suburbs, hit me up on LinkedIn. So
who knows?
I figure I'd reach out to your massive audience that you've acquired.
There's some people that I'm sure do coding and stuff and...
Yeah.
Work with Linux that listen to the show. And if you are, you can hit Brian Sebi up for a job, man.
I figure it couldn't hurt to try.
Yeah. No. Hey, this is the right community to do it with for sure.
Yeah.
Patrick, what about you?
Keep listening to Patrick. Please leave us reviews. I have Politicked Off, which is my other podcast that I do with other Peaches and Hot Sauce alum, Zach Mast, where it's kind of like a parody of NPR news shows. So, and also subscribe to Peaches and Hot Sauce YouTube channel. We're making more videos now.
Yeah, please do.
That's all I got.
Cool. Listen to this. Listen to Making New Friends. It's a podcast I've been doing for a long time and don't pay enough attention to. So you should pay attention to it to make up for the fact that I don't pay enough attention to it. That'd be great. Listen to Dungeon Rats. It's an interactive dungeon crawl that I'm doing every other Monday. Over at the One Shot Podcast Network. It's twitch.tv/OneShotRPG, Mondays at 8 o'clock. Every other Monday at 8 o'clock. Well, that's confusing. Just go to the One Shot Podcast YouTube page, and you can see the archives and then get hooked up with when we're doing this thing. And follow me on Twitter at PatLikesATweet, because Facebook is for noobs.
Let's see what's out there.
Peaches. Hot sauce. Peaches. Hot sauce. Sauce, peaches, hot sauce, peaches, hot sauce, got your peaches.